Chapter 12. Myrta Gev to Aelin Habur. Am returning to Coruscant. Have not received your replies to previous messages. Please confirm rendezvous point. Have heart of fire. Myrta Gev's comlink text to suspect Aelin Habur. Intercepted by Galactic Alliance Guard Signals Squad. Passed to Colonel Solo for evaluation. Jason Solo's apartment, Rotunda Zone. The one thing you could count on with Corellians was that if you knocked them down, they got up again and again and again. Jason had been too preoccupied with the anti-terror operations to devote time to sensing what Thrak and Sal Solo might be doing from a strategic point of view. Fleet intelligence seemed to have that under control, but he knew that Centerpoint would remain an issue as long as it hadn't been totally destroyed, and this morning his uncle didn't disappoint him. Jason had joined the billions of Coruscanti, whose morning now began by switching on the HNE news, even before the first cup of caff, to check how close to war they were getting. HNE was running an interview from Corellian Holonews with Sal Solo, in which he announced work was about to start on restoring Centerpoint Station to operational status. Jason wasn't sure if Sal Solo had the capacity to do that, or how long he might take to achieve it, but it was perfect timing. If this didn't persuade the Alliance to authorize the blockade of Corellia, nothing would. Striking at Corellia's industrial orbiters would have achieved far more, far faster. But he knew a blockade could achieve the same ends in time. Time means lives. Time means more chaos. We always think that time will resolve things, but it never has. He forgot about calf and breakfast, left Ben to sleep off the previous night's operation, and went straight to the Senate. Neothel, always an early riser, had beaten him to it. He found her in Omis's offices, and he knew the Admiral and he had one thing in mind. Omis was watching the holoscreen he now had running permanently in his private office. "Diplomacy by Holonews," he said irritably. Neothel nodded at Jason to sit beside her, a little psychological display of unity in front of their reluctant chief.
"Did you think Sal Solo would pick up the comlink and ask if it was okay to start work on Centerpoint again?"
Jason glanced discreetly at her. Her expressions were becoming as easy to read as her emotions. She was satisfied.
"I don't think we have any choice," he said. "We can't ignore this."
"I hate that phrase." Omis turned down the audio volume. "Because it's usually true these days."
"It's going to take two fleets to isolate Corellia," said Neothel. "I'm asking you for authority to pull the third and fifth fleets back from exercises on the Outer Rim."
Omis wore an expression of weary resignation, but the edge in his voice said different.
"I need authority from the Senate first."
"Getting two fleets into position to begin a blockade takes time. You start on the Senate procedures, and we'll get the logistics in hand. Then we'll be ready to deploy as soon as the authority is given."
"We?"
Omis asked pointedly, looking at Jason.
"The Defense Force,"
Neothel said stiffly.
"Well, you catch on eventually, Chief," thought Jason. "Yes, we've taken sides, and she's not on yours."
"Don't jump the gun," said Omis. "I have to table this as an emergency motion. We have to carry the rest of the Alliance with us."
But it was a foregone conclusion as far as Neothel was concerned. Jason followed the Admiral out into the corridor and into her offices at the far end of the floor. They didn't speak until the doors were closed behind them and she had pressed a key set in her desk.
"Just to be certain," she said, "this is the secure link that doesn't go via Fleet Comsen."
"You're recalling those two fleets, aren't you?"
"I don't have to ask the Senate's authority to move assets already committed to exercises.
So you just bring them back home for exercises? Here?"
"Almost." She hit a few more keys. No point letting the enemy prepare for a blockade, or it just prolongs the thing. I've drawn up plans for the blockade. Total exclusion zone? No. Two exclusion zones. One to stop Corellia resupplying center point from the surface. If we rely purely on isolating Corellia from the outside, then the embargo will take years to bite. If they can't get material up to center point, then that does the job a lot faster.
Jason thought about the mass of industrial orbiters strung around the planet.
That means creating two picket lines as sterile zones. That's why I need both fleets. I'm going to share the plan with the fleet commanders. Then they stand off a couple of hours' jump from Corellia, and they're ready to deploy the moment the Senate gives the word.
You're sure you can trust them?
They're both Mon Calamari.
Yes, I trust them.
Almas is getting cold feet. They can get as cold as he likes. But Sal Solo is not just refusing to disarm. He's rearming. I think that'll get the Alliance's attention.
Jason heard Lumia's voice within him, reminding him of the inevitability of it all, and that if he embraced his role, his duty, he could bring order to the galaxy. He thought of his 5 years of studying every arcane school of Force philosophy, and wondered what more Lumia could show him to bring him to the status of a Sith master. He couldn't imagine it. So he simply seized the tenuous ideas and thoughts that welled up in his mind, not knowing their source or validity, but eager to accept that his intuition might be the key. He was running on instinct, not intellect.
Feel, don't think.
Even the Jedi taught him that.
See, you don't think of yourself as a Jedi any longer.
Jason had no idea whose voice that was. His, Lumia's, another's entirely. But he surrendered to it.
I would like to play a role in the blockade, he said.
Neathel projected a holochart of the Corellian system onto the wall and stood back to study it.
You're a fighter pilot, aren't you? Like your sister.
I'd like a command. A ship. A squadron. I'm confusing you, aren't I?
I thought you already had quite a substantial command as head of the Galactic Alliance Guard.
I'd like to show that I'm prepared to fight in the front line, Jason said.
I think everyone knows that from your combat record.
That wasn't against my father's homeworld.
Ah, the ultimate loyalty test, said Neathel,
if you like.
Very well. You can have temporary group command. That'll include the squadron your sister commands. Unusual to have one colonel under another, but it's not unknown. If that doesn't demonstrate that the Solo family puts nation before family, I don't know what will.
It's more than that. I have to have the respect and support of more than one admiral. I need the rank and file to see me as their own, too, just in case you can't deliver their loyalty. Or you change your mind about me.
Thank you, Admiral.
Admiral Neathel gave him a tight-lipped smile and moved icons of battleships around her chart with the motion of one finger.
Time I brought the exercises to an end, then.
The icons had become a three-dimensional net around Corellia, separating the planet from its industrial facilities, which lay entirely in orbiting stations far above the pleasantly rural planet. The Corellians wished to keep unspoiled countryside free from industrial sprawl, now made them very vulnerable.
I'm calling Endex 5 days early. The commanders know what I have in mind now.
Neathel went to her desk comm, and the message that would effectively start the war was, ironically, one that usually brought maneuvers to a halt. Jason watched the small screen as the encryption program took the plain language text and wrapped it in a secure algorithm.
Endex, Endex, Endex. End of exercise, said Neathel, and the start of the real war.
Slave One, en route to Corellia.
What's up with you?
Fett asked. Myrta kept chewing her lip, It was a very discreet habit, but Fett was alert to small detail. Hunters had to be.
"Where are we heading?"
"Corellia."
"You said Coruscant."
"No, you said Coruscant." Fett switched the navigation display to a 3D holochart so that she could see it shimmering above the console in front of the viewscreen. "I've got business in Corellia first."
She fell silent,
and seeing as she hadn't said a great deal on the journey anyway, he wasn't shocked, but something had agitated her. Maybe it was the messages she kept sending to Coruscant. Aelin wasn't answering. Fett wondered when Myrta would work out that monitoring transmissions to and from Slave One, even those made via private comlinks, was part of the ship's security system. Maybe it was time to shake Myrta down a little.
"I've lost contact with my customer,"
Myrta said at last.
"Points for honesty, then."
"She might not want to pay up. Is it just the necklace, or did you have information for her?"
"Information, too."
"You weren't stupid enough to give her that data over the comlink, were you?"
"No."
"Then she'll pay up."
I'm more worried about her safety. She was on a job."
"I know." "Yeah, dead customers don't pay."
"Exactly."
But Mira's voice sounded small and afraid for once. Maybe she wasn't quite the experienced bounty hunter she made herself out to be. Fett decided that Aelin was too sharp an operator to risk transmissions when she was hunting someone like Han Solo. She was his daughter, after all. Some of his genes must have made her what she was. And few bounty hunters made enough credits to be able to afford Fett's line in secure communications kit. She'd be there, somewhere. He opened his own comlink. It didn't matter if Myrta heard this. "Bevin," he said. "Bevin, I have a job I'd like to discuss with you." It took a while for Bevin to answer.
"Mandalore?"
"Bevin. Thrakensal Solo wants us to fight for him. Defending Centerpoint Station."
"Yes, it's all over the news. He was on HNE this morning about rebuilding it yet again. War's about to kick off. Solo's son is head of the Alliance's secret police, and the Corellians are really Adenla about it."
"Assemble as many commandos as you can. Meet me on draw in 2 days at Hallen's Bar."
"It closed down 5 years ago. Try the Zeria. Same street."
"I'm out of touch. Too much time on Terrace. Okay, make it the Zeria."
"I can probably get half a dozen together by then. Almost everyone else has headed back to Mandalore."
"Six. Six. Too busy to do their duty."
"Why?" "It's harvest time. Quite a few of us have farms."
"Aren't the women supposed to look after that?"
Bevin had an adopted daughter. Fett couldn't recall her name, but he was sure she was old enough to run a farm.
"What happened to the Rapid Response Force?"
Bevin's voice chilled perceptibly.
"If there was a real war on, we'd be pretty rapid."
Fett was almost distracted by the idea of his Mandalorian troops doing something as banal as farming. He'd never thought much about what they did when they weren't deployed. But they had wives and children, and lives.
"Whoever you can get in 2 days, then."
Fett closed the link. Myrta stared at him, clearly appalled.
"So you disapprove of fighting for Corellia?"
She shrugged.
"I was thinking that you don't know much about what's happening on your own world, considering you're supposed to be the Mandalore."
"I don't even live there."
"The Yuuzhan Vong hit the Mandalore sector as badly as anywhere, Fent."
It was the first time she'd addressed him by name. "Everyone's still rebuilding. You know what your own name means? Farmer."
"Vet. It's Mandoa for farmer."
"I know that." "Dad came from Concord Dawn. He said his family were frontier farmers. How did he get a Mandalorian name, then?" "I'm more of a blaster and jetpack man myself."
"How can you rule a nation when you don't know the first thing about it?"
"It's not a nation, and I don't run it.
I'm a figurehead when they don't need me to fight, and a commander-in-chief when they do. A mercenary for your own people. The irony isn't lost on me. You're out of touch. More Mandalorians are heading back home.
Home? There aren't that many. And what's home?
You've no idea how many Mandoade there are. Have you? Plenty. Not just your troops and bounty hunters. People who've kept their culture alive all across the galaxy. Just like your father was adopted by Jaster Mareel, the culture gets passed on.
You know a lot about me.
More than you know about yourself, obviously.
Myrta was actually angry.
Fett could see the color in her cheeks. Her voice had tightened and raised a pitch. My dad said a Mandalore should be like a father to his people.
I don't need a lecture in responsibilities from a kid.
Well, your daughter wanted to kill you because you walked down on her and her mother, so I'll take it that responsibility isn't your strong suit.
Fett was used to fear, deference, or awe. He hadn't seen much defiance in his adult life. Not for long, anyway. Myrta didn't seem to care if he dumped her out of the airlock. My own kid. I had what Dad wanted so badly, and I threw it away.
I was 16, he said. Sintas was 18. The only females I knew as a kid were a Kaminoan and a changeling bounty hunter. Doesn't equip you to be a family man. I tried.
Yeah.
Fett never let himself get angry. To be angry, you had to care. And the only person he had ever cared about was his father. But this girl had touched a nerve. Maybe I'd have grown up a nice guy if a Jedi hadn't cut my dad's head off in front of me.
It's hard to lose a parent.
Where are yours?
Dad's dead.
Mother?
Haven't seen her in a while.
You'll grow up as bitter as me, girl.
Already have, said Myrta. Already have.
There was nothing more to say. He'd already said too much, and he had to warn Bevine, not to mention that they all knew that Aelin was hunting Han Solo. He laid in a course for drawl and wondered what he would say to Aelin when he finally caught up with her. For the first time in his life, he suspected it would be sorry. High Council Chamber, Jedi Temple, Coruscant. Luke knew events had reached the point where he could do nothing to pull the Alliance back from confrontation with Corellium. There was only damage limitation. A blockade was the least destructive option. He had already decided not to press Cal Omas to step back from the brink. He wasn't even sure that Omas could do that if he wanted to. The Jedi Council sat in a grim circle, as it must have done many times in the face of war over the millennia, and seemed to look to him for an answer. Corran Horn, Corellian, stubborn, unperturbed, was there. At least Jason had the decency not to round up a senior Jedi master in his purges.
"I think we've exhausted diplomacy," Luke said.
"A blockade is simply going to rally other worlds to Corellia's cause," said Horn. "And don't think I'm saying that as wish fulfillment, because I'm Corellian. I'm just reading the mood like everyone else."
"Attacking Corellia directly isn't going to achieve anything different, and letting Corellia have its way is going to encourage every other government to follow suit."
"Then the only question is to ask what the role of the Jedi Council is going to be in this."
"Same as it's always been," said Kyle Katarn. "Looking for a peaceful solution, but ready to fight for the Alliance if called upon."
Silgall interrupted.
"With respect, Master Skywalker, there is a question we all appear to be unwilling to mention."
"Which is?"
"The actions of Jason Solo."
Luke avoided Mara's eye. She was sitting to one side, staring intently at her datapad on the table in front of her. And she didn't use her standing as Secretary of the Council to ask Silgall to table the question formally. Mara had never been one for slavish adherence to procedure.
"If you want to raise that, let's be specific."
Luke fought down a reflex to turn to Mara and say, "See, they noticed it, too."
He knew perfectly well what he saw. The only reason he wasn't doing something about it was his own family interests, his own need for peace with Ben and Mara. And that's not good enough. I think we've all noted the prominence of Jason in events involving the Corellian community.
Since you're frank enough to say so, then may I ask if you have misgivings about a Jedi being seen to act against civilians like this?
Silgall squirmed visibly, but Luke admired her courage for confronting him when nobody else seemed willing to point out that his nephew was behaving badly by Jedi standards, by any standards.
With your own son accompanying him.
I'm the Grand Master. I have a duty. Sorry, Mara. I'm deeply troubled by it. There was a collective intake of breath.
Is that it? Said Kip Duran.
I have no control over Jason. He exists outside the Jedi Order, and he isn't Ben's master, and Ben is not his apprentice. Luke could feel and see 11 pairs of eyes turning to Mara. Luke knew it was unfair to expose a family argument to High Council scrutiny, but this was no longer just a couple disagreeing over their child's education.
Jason is turning dark. I have to have the courage of my convictions.
Mara looked up, and her expression was set like permacrete in neutral calm.
I'm not sure if I should take part in this discussion. I have to declare an interest.
Let's put this another way, said Katarn. It's an embarrassment for the Jedi Order to see the son and nephew of the Grand Master kicking down doors with the boys in black.
But you accept that the Galactic Alliance Guard is acting legally?
Unpalatably, but legally, yes. Katarn and Silgall had now formed up into a definite but respectful attack, as if they were relieved that they weren't imagining it all.
It's the involvement of Jedi in it that we're most uncomfortable with.
Ah, we. Luke was ripped apart at that moment. He had either to humiliate his wife or deceive the High Council because of his own personal fears. It didn't matter that his word was law here. He knew he was on thin ice.
I am, too, he said at last. I'll be asking Ben to withdraw from operations with the Guard.
He's 13, said Duran. You should be telling him.
Mara said nothing, but Luke could feel her boiling inside. He knew what would happen when the meeting was over, but she had the grace not to argue with him in front of the High Council.
Jason's clearly popular with the public, Duran added carefully, and more than one of us in this chamber has gone to some extremes and come back okay. So maybe we should be making an effort to help him identify more with the Order.
Meaning, said Luke, it's time he became a master. We all know what he can do.
Luke had a sudden image of his father. His sense of déjà vu was both comforting, because his father had been redeemed, and terrifying. Terrifying because Vader had once been a Jedi prodigy, too, a decent young man. But the dark side had claimed him nonetheless. And it might well claim Jason. Luke could taste it.
It's not frustration at not being a master. He's gone dark, and he's not the only darkness I can feel.
Luke wondered why Lumia had come back, and knew it wasn't to see how much her old homeworld had changed since she'd been away. But it wasn't the time to mention Lumia. He turned his mind back to Jason's status in the Order.
"Let me think about that," said Luke.
The meeting broke up shortly afterward. Mara said nothing to Luke until they were well out of earshot, sitting in their speeder on the way back to the apartment.
"I want Ben away from Jason," Luke said at last. "Honey, we've discussed that. I'm sorry it came up in the meeting. But I can't turn a blind eye to it any longer. It stops now. No 13-year-old should be out on raids with Jason's secret police.
Or with Jason at all, right?
Mara, everyone sees it. He's having a bad affair."
Bad affair? He's interning Corellians. You heard Silgall. I'm not delusional. Have you spoken to Leia, Han?
Don't mention Jaina.
I haven't heard a word from my sister and my best friend in days. If you genuinely believe there's nothing odd or worrying about Jason right now, then open up that comlink and call Leia and ask her what she thinks.
Okay. And if she says yes, her son's turning into Palpatine, what do we do?
Drag Ben away from him, kicking and screaming? If need be, yes.
When did you last talk to Ben?
Too long ago.
When he came back after being gassed.
Well, I speak to him most days, and he's a changed kid. He's happy, he's respectful, he's calm. He's grown up, Luke. Jason did that.
Well, bully for Jason. I still don't want our boy being trained by him.
So you can tell Ben he's back to square one, then?
I will.
And then you can work out who's going to take him on.
Maybe I'll have to do it for a while.
Oh, that'll work.
And this was why they had come to this point. Because there was nobody else who could handle Ben like Jason could. Luke was no further forward. But he could ask Jason not to take him on raids. As for Jason being seen as the Jedi who kicked down doors, he couldn't touch him. People were reassured by his hard line. And even if the Jedi Order threw him out, by whatever mechanism they might have to draw up for that, Jason would still be a massively powerful Force user, and nothing could take that from him. It was probably better to have him inside the tent than outside throwing rocks. For the time being, anyway. Mara wasn't stupid, so why wouldn't she concede that Jason was dangerous?
"There's something else you need to know, honey," said Luke, "and it's not good.
It can't be worse than this."
"It could be."
It was time. Luke couldn't hold it back any longer. He was grateful for the auto-navigating sky lanes of Coruscant, because he doubted if he could have flown straight, unaided, right then.
"Lumi is back.
I don't know where or how, but she's back."